This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, everybody.
Can't get enough of the Rich Eisen Show? You're in luck. You can find us everywhere. Watch us weekdays on Disney Plus from noon to 3 Eastern. Miss the show? We've got a podcast so you can listen anytime. But here's the best part. Our YouTube channel. Subscribe at youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show and you'll never miss a moment. Now, on with the show. This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Parental discretion is advised.
A Springer Dinger!
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Jameer,
you got no shot at catching that man.
Today's guests, senior writer for the MMQB, Albert Breer, three-time Super Bowl champion, Mark Schlereth, author Jeff Perlman, and now, it's Rich Eisen.
Well, cheerio, everybody. Back from London, back in the chair. It's been a minute. Right here on the Rich Eisen Show in Los Angeles, California. Pleased to be back here with you on Disney Plus, the ESPN app everywhere, and ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. We did do the show from London last Thursday and Friday, but for the last week and a half, from Susie to Tom Pelissero to yesterday, Colleen Wolfe filling in this chair, I greatly appreciate it. Almost went royal we on y'all, but I greatly appreciate it. Back here with you, 844-204-RICH, number to dial in Los Angeles, California. We've got Albert Breer joining us from the New York City-based Breer NFL owners meetings that's going down in the middle of the season, and a lot's going on now that Week 7 is in the books. And he will be joining us from Sports Illustrated, and Mark Schlereth will be joining us in hour number two to tell us all his thoughts and everything that's gone on through the first 7 weeks of the NFL season. And the author, Jeff Perlman, is in studio. Love anything that he writes in his latest book on the life and times of Tupac Shakur. Is a must read for everybody. And that book is out right now wherever you get your books. He'll be joining us in studio hour number three. As we all know, he wrote literally the book on the Showtime Lakers, the dynastic Cowboys of the 90s, and Bo Jackson. He's one of our favorites. The World Series is set between the Toronto Blue Jays and the Los Angeles Dodgers. We'll discuss that on the program as well. Good to see you, the Christopher Brockman, now that all the table setting is out of the way. Good
to see
you.
How you doing, man? Welcome back.
I am doing well. Thank you. Mikey D, good to see you.
Good to see you, Rich.
Good to see you. Mikey D as in DJ, Mikey D as in D's Nuts. TJ Jefferson, good to see you. Candle is lit over there. Good.
Hello, bro.
And everybody who takes in the show via podcast, we greatly appreciate that. The latest Overreaction Monday is out. As soon as I got off the plane from London, Chris Brockman and I recorded it right before the Monday night games. And during the Monday night games, no contest wrestling, O'Shea Jackson and TJ had George Kittle of the San Francisco 49ers talking some wrestling. And maybe you got a little bit of stuff out of him on the NFL front because I asked you to. And I think O'Shea asked him the question that I was telling him to ask, by saying Rich wanted me to ask you. So that's coming up later on in this program.
Just so you know, we were going to do that.
I got it. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial here on the program. Hey, the Detroit Lions last night taking on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to wrap up week number 7 with a doubleheader on Monday Night Football. The Seattle Seahawks take care of business against the Houston Texans later on. We'll hit that in an hour number 3 of this show. But as for the Detroit Lions, you know I love talking about them. You know I love talking about them after a win, because I chose them to win the NFC at the end of the day. And I like being right. I like being proven correct.
You mentioned that.
It's one of my favorite things. But if I'm wrong, I'll raise my hand and say, hey, I'm off. And at the end of the day, you know, they're not even in the top two. They're not even leading their division right now. Believe it or not, through 7 weeks of the NFC campaign, the 4-1-1 Green Bay Packers are currently your one seed, with the 5-2 aforementioned San Francisco 49ers sitting there. And then you've got the Eagles leading the NFC East at 5-2, and the Buccaneers now at 5-2 with that loss last night in Detroit. They lead their division in the NFC South. And right now the Lions are sitting in at 5-2 in the 5 seed, kind of like, you know, the team that they put in that position last year, the Minnesota Vikings. If you recall that last game of last year, Lions had a chance to win the conference, win the division, win the conference in the final game of the season against the Vikings. They did so, and the Vikings became a 14-win wild card team that got one and done here in Los Angeles. I set all that up to say is that the Lions don't want to be in the position of the Minnesota Vikings at the end of the day, which is top wild card team. And last night, they took a large step towards not being that, even though they are right now through 7 weeks. That's because they beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the only at the time 5-1 team in the conference. And they beat them up. And they not only beat them up, they took care of business on defense with, once again, stop me if you've heard this story before, speaking of last season, half their defense on the back end out due to injury. Or in the case of Brian Branch, suspended because he slapped at Juju Smith-Schuster after the Kansas City Chiefs game last week, right, in the loss in Arrowhead that kind of lingered into this game as well on the Amon-Ra St. Brown front. I'll get to that in a second. But the defense getting it done against the, in my estimation, coming into week 7, clear MVP through the first 6 weeks of the season in Baker Mayfield. They were all over him. The pass rush was getting home. And when the pass rush wasn't getting home, the back end of the defense, with names that you don't really hear very much being mentioned. I mean, Robertson, Arthur Millett. You don't hear that name a lot, but you certainly did when he ripped the ball out of the hands, I believe, of Cade Otton when it was resting on his shoulder, coming up with an interception last night. Robertson forced a fumble. Nick Whiteside, some key pass breakups for the Detroit Lions. And that's it. Once again, excellent coaching and deep rostering can win a day. And last night against a 5-1 Tampa Bay Buccaneers team that had just gotten Mike Evans back before losing him for the rest of the season. We'll talk about that later on. No Bucky Irving. They do have Ibuka. They don't have Godwin. Mayfield is down some parts, but he could not get past a Lions defense that was, A, getting home with a pass rush with a terrific front seven, and then a bunch of guys who's needs the name tags for the Ford Field faithful last night. So they don't have their coordinators from last year. That's supposed to be a problem. They don't have a lot of their top-ranked players on the back end of their defense. That's supposed to be a problem. Jahmyr Gibbs takes care of it. Sets a career high with 218 scrimmage yards. Most by a Detroit player in a game since... anybody? Bueller? Nope.
Calvin.
Week 8, 2013. He had 329 yards from scrimmage.
Jeez.
It's insane. But 218 scrimmage yards, a buck 36 on the ground, 82 in the air. First player with 130 more rush yards and 80 or more receiving yards in a game since Saquon Barkley. In 2019, you thought he did it twice against the Rams last year, didn't you?
I was about to say.
No, it was in 2019. The only Lions players with 200 or more scrimmage yards in a primetime game now are named Jahmyr Gibbs and the two guys you mentioned, TJ.
Okay, Barry and Calvin.
That's correct, sir. And Barry was there last night.
It's a good list to be on.
Right. 78-yard rushing touchdown was the longest of his career.
Yeah. It felt good to have him in fantasy.
And then Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Sun God.
Now, again, remember when I came on the air on Tuesday, 1 week ago today, talking about the loss in Kansas City for the Lions, that game turned on a fourth down attempt on just inside the Kansas City portion of the 50. Okay. And they go for it in the second quarter of that game, and Goff and Amon-Ra can't connect. The Chiefs then hop on the football, score right before halftime, score right after halftime, and that game completely flipped. Well, you heard Joe Buck and Troy Aikman say over and over again in the first quarter of that game, that of last night, that Amon-Ra St. Brown had steam coming out of his ears all week long, that he sent a text to Goff apologizing for not catching the ball, and Goff responded by essentially saying, hey, man, I didn't put the ball completely on you either. And Buck was saying all week long, the Lions organization was saying they can't wait to see what Amon-Ra St. Brown is going to do when he gets back on the field. And sure enough, six catches for 86 yards and the receiving touchdown to start it all off before Gibbs ripped it all off after that. Amon-Ra St. Brown leads the NFL with seven receiving touchdowns this year now. So Amon-Ra's doing his thing. The defense is doing its thing. And if Jahmyr Gibbs continues to do his thing, you're gonna see the Lions win a lot more. And it appears the head coach believes it's only just the beginning for Jahmyr Gibbs.
Felt like this was coming. You know, you felt like that this has been building, and you know, as he gets in better shape and starts getting his feet under him, you know, starts getting a feel of it, starts breaking some tackles, you just feel like every week it's gotten closer and closer. And tonight was the night where he busted one of these out of there, and there'll be no looking back. I mean, I think he's just going to continue to do this. So our O-line did a good job, you know, in areas of getting into the second level. Certainly, we got to continue to improve there. But, man, that's all you got to do. If you can get him to the second level, he'll do the rest. You know, and we're fortunate because our O-line can open some holes in it. We have receivers that block. So the rest is up to him one-on-one with the safety.
Yep. That said, plus one, all of it. No Kirby Joseph out with a knee. No Terrion Arnold out with a shoulder. No G.J. Reed. He's on IR. Brian Branch suspended, as I mentioned. Baker Mayfield, a 66.1 passer rating anyway. Four sacks, 20 quarterback pressures, 12 passes defensed. That's the most by a Lions team in 23 years. That's what they did last night. Highly impressive W.
Yeah.
For sure. In all of that regard. You remember also, too, just quick, before we throw to break, and Albert Breer is going to join us. Remember when Jahmyr Gibbs got drafted?
Yeah, people questioned why
did they ever?
Took a back that high, yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
Especially since they already had
David Montgomery.
Knuckles.
Yep.
Why do you need a Sonic when you already got Knuckles? Certainly when you spend that money in free agency. And all I heard that night, from that Thursday night of the draft to the Friday, from a bunch of my guys on the set and from behind the scenes elsewhere, all I heard is the Lions jumped the line on a ton of teams on Jahmyr Gibbs.
You told us that.
They jumped the line on a ton of teams on Jahmyr Gibbs. And boy, do the Lions look smart. Another guy that they drafted in the first round that everyone was questioning was one of our glue guys, Jack Campbell out of Iowa.
All right.
How's he looking right now? So
on that 70-yard touchdown, Chris, he just ran straight up the gut. And it was the first time in a while someone has reminded me of Chris Johnson. Remember those good ones, Chris Johnson runs where Gus?
Good one.
Gus would just yell, speed, because there was nothing else to say. That's what that run was like.
Well, Jared Goff was talking about that run after the game. And if you could see in the replay, he put his hands up like touchdown. Like Lane Kiffin back in the day when he was calling plays for Alabama. Roll it.
Those long ones are fun to watch. And I feel like I got the best seat in the house just to like see him hit the hole and then just like take off. And there, I don't know how many safeties in the league could catch him. So as soon as he gets there, it's over. You know, he's gone. And it felt like last year, the Titans run, you know, the 70-yard run, it was very similar where it's just like him on the safety and it's over. But yeah, it's pretty cool. He's dang fast and it's fun to watch.
They have a bye now, so all of those defenders can come back from either suspension or injury. We'll see what happens. Yeah. And then after that, home game with Minnesota at Washington. Who the heck knows what's going on with them, right? Before a Sunday night visit to Philadelphia. What a big, huge game in the NFC standings that is going to be. Before they finish up on Thanksgiving against Green Bay. Following week against Dallas, they visit the Rams out here. Another big game in the NFC. The rest of their division matchups around a home date with an Aaron Rodgers visit back to Detroit. That's some fun, must-see television with the Detroit Lions playing like this and Dan Campbell just being as entertaining as ever, coaching his ass off, and his team just being full of grit. Fun stuff. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. When we come back, Albert Breer with his thoughts on the Monday night doubleheader and what is going on in Miami. That's coming up.
The Rich Eisen Show Podcast.
As many of you know, supporting pediatric cancer research is something I care deeply about.
That's why I'm proud to share what Hyundai's doing through Hyundai Hope on Wheels. For over 27 years, with every Hyundai sold, they've helped fund pediatric cancer research. Alongside over 850 dealers, they've raised more than $277 million, helping over 25,000 kids and supporting more than 1,400 research grants at 175 institutions nationwide. This year alone, they've committed another $27 million in honor of the 27th anniversary of the program. And they're proud to have national youth ambassadors like Jackson Trin and Emmy Cole, who bring hope to kids across the country by sharing their stories. Because at Hyundai, hope is our greatest feature, and it comes standard. Visit HyundaiUSA.com and search Hyundai Hope on Wheels to learn more. Here on the Rich Eisen Show on the ESPN Radio Network, brought to you by, presented by Progressive Insurance. We were just talking about how Mike McDaniel had a little bit of gallows humor, saying, you know, Tua's going to start and hopefully won't throw 10 picks. Tua might not like it. A lot of people might think it's unprofessional, but I mean, that's just literally him being him, McDaniel.
Yeah.
And there's nowhere to go but up. Joining us here now on this subject and many others, back on the Rich Eisen Show, joining us from the league owners meeting that's going on right now during the season in New York City, Sports Illustrated's Albert Breer. Good to see you, Albert. How are you?
I'm good. How are we doing, Rich?
Good to see you. Is that somebody going on behind you? Is it like a backstage?
So we got going on maintenance may be happening behind me here at the hotel. You guys are getting a real taste of the atmosphere here.
Ah, very good. Sounds good. Looks like they're getting the velvet ropes, probably for, you know, the commissioner. That's the only way he knows how to roll. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
All right. Let's just jump into it here, because we were talking about Tua and Mike McDaniel's comment that he hopes Tua's not going to throw 10 picks. I guess the gallows humor is coming out in Miami right now. What can you tell us is, in fact, happening for the Dolphins in that organization right now, Albert?
You know, I think that there's a lot of reflection happening inside that building now. And I just don't know where the next answer is. And, you know, if you want, like, I could take you through some of the history of this. But I think it really goes back to, you know, a couple of years ago when they were winning. And they had a culture there that I think was a little permissive of the stars. And, you know, where maybe there was one set of rules for guys like Tyreek Hill and Jalen Ramsey and a separate set of rules for other guys. And that works when you're winning. You know, then a couple of years ago, a couple of those guys clashed with Vic Fangio when Fangio came in as the DC. So they wind up moving on from Fangio after 23. And then last year, you're not winning anymore. And there are more questions, I think, internally on the leadership of the team. And so this year they come in, they try and really emphasize character in building the team for 2025. And now they're sitting there at 1-6. The quarterback isn't playing well. The area of the game where, you know, Mike McDaniel's expertise is, and I don't think he's lost his ability to build an offense or call an offense or coach a quarterback, but that obviously isn't working at a very high level right now. And, you know, I do think there are some people in the organization who, before the end of the year, might like to get a look at Anthony Weaver, you know, as an interim coach. So there's just a lot of moving parts there right now. And, you know, I think Mike McDaniel still got some rope to kind of climb his way out of this. But, you know, certainly, you know, there weren't great signs and what was a really, really dark, I think, afternoon for them in Cleveland.
My goodness, was it ever. Okay, so no changes on the horizon? Or because I mean the trade deadline's coming up too. You know, trade deadline's a couple weeks away, Albert. You know,
yeah,
it's right there.
And I think that that's an important piece of nuance here, because the hard thing about the trade deadline is, okay, so the teams that are going to be sellers are generally teams that are waving the white flag on the season. But if you are Chris Greer or you are Mike McDaniel and your jobs might be on the line right now, are you willing to move on from players that can help you the rest of the year, maybe help you dig out of this, when the assets coming back aren't going to be things that, yeah, might be assets you won't get a chance to use because they could be 2026 draft picks. So, you know, I think sometimes in these sorts of situations, it becomes what's best for the organization long-term versus what's best for the guys running the organization as it's currently constituted short-term. And, you know, there are cases where you see owners make changes in season to kind of make sure that, you know, it's like it's the focus is on what's best for the organization from a long-term standpoint. So it's a weird position to be in. And I hate to be the one who's going to sit here and tell you like Stephen Ross does not want to fire Mike McDaniel, because it does feel like things are going that way. I don't think he wants to do this in season. Then again, you know, there's that long-term piece of it. And there's also the fact that you do have, you know, an assistant coach on hand who you might want to get a look at before the end of the season, you know, in the head coach's seat.
Albert Breer here on the Rich Eisen Show from the league owners meeting in New York City midseason. We'll get to that in a second, as well as some crucial week 8 games. My goodness, things are going fast halfway through the season for some. Right here on the Rich Eisen Show. So let's jump into the Monday Nighter before we turn the page. What do you got from what's your takeaway from the doubleheader results from Monday night, Albert?
Well, so like the Lions, I think the takeaway is that might be the most complete team in football right now, and the most complete roster in football right now. And God, were there some dumb things said after week one, after they lost at Lambeau. You know, I think what you're seeing right now is, you know, we've given Dan Campbell a lot of credit, and rightfully so, for digging that organization out of the hole that it was in, you know, back in 2021. You know, I think maybe the person we haven't given enough credit to is the general manager, Brad Holmes, because even though they lost Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn in the offseason, that still was a team full of talented young players, and it was on display again last night with Jahmyr Gibbs and Amon-Ra St. Brown and Penei Sewell and what he's meant to that team, and Aiden Hutchinson and Jack Campbell. And God, they didn't have Brian Branch, but he's one of those players too. That is a talented, balanced, young roster. Even still, they've got a quarterback who's playing at an MVP level in Jared Goff. And so I think for the third straight year, they're very firmly in the Super Bowl mix, even without those coordinators that were part of building the thing up. And then, you know, in the late game, I think it's hard not to look first at the struggles that CJ Stroud has had with a new offensive coordinator and how the Texans are going to dig themselves out of it. And on the flip side, I'd say Seattle, you know, I sort of looked at Seattle coming into the year like I looked at Green Bay. They had a lot of very good young players that, you know, some of the guys that came aboard as a result of all the capital they got in the Russell Wilson trade. So, you know, just like Green Bay, to me, they were this team full of very good players, and it's like, can they elevate to become great players? And I think you're starting to see that with the young players really becoming such important pieces of their core on defense, guys like Byron Murphy and Eamon Worry, who they just drafted, and Devin Witherspoon. And then on the offensive side, JSN becoming one of the best receivers in all of football, Charles becoming one of the best left tackles in all of football, the two backs, Charbonnet and Walker. And then, you know, Sam Darnold, I think, proving to all of us that last year really wasn't a fluke, that this is who he's becoming as a quarterback. And so, you know, I look at the job Mike McDonald and John Schneider have done, just not even just, you know, getting those guys, building the roster back up, you know, again, in part through all the capital they got in the Russell Wilson trade, but then developing those guys and those guys continuing to get better. And, you know, I think certainly there's a lot of intention, rightfully so, on Jaxon Smith-Njigba and how he's played the last few weeks. But there are a lot of guys on that roster just like that were already really good players coming into the year that I think are on the precipice of becoming great players.
Yeah, and the Seahawks at 5-2 going into a bye. The Rams coming off of a win in London that I saw with my own two eyes. They're 5-2 going into a bye. The Niners sitting there at 5-2 heading into Houston to start turning the page here a little bit to week 8. Is Brock Purdy anywhere on the horizon here for them, do you think?
Yeah, I think this is sort of a day-to-day thing at this point. And I think Mac Jones has given them some flexibility. It's incredible what they've done, isn't it, Rich?
Yeah,
you know, like, I mean, to lose the guys that they've lost, to play without Brock and Nick Bosa and Fred Warner, you know, Brandon Ayuk still hasn't stepped foot on the field. Kittle lost a lot of time. I think McCaffrey deserves to be in the MVP conversation based on what he's meant to them. But yeah, I think because of the way that Max played, they've got some flexibility with Brock. And I know, you know, Brock badly wants to get out there, and he pushed it the last time, right? Like, that was a 2 or 3 week injury. He went on the 2 week side and wound up aggravating it. So they're going to be careful, but I do think he's in the day to day category now. Maybe it happens this week. Maybe it happens next week. We'll see. Obviously they have yet to step foot on the practice field yet. So we should probably know more tomorrow.
And the first game of week eight is coming up in just a couple of days right here in Los Angeles, the Chargers, after getting, shown the door, by the rampaging Indianapolis Colts, taking on a Vikings team that did give the Eagles all it could handle before succumbing. What's the scoop on the quarterback front for Minnesota? J.J. McCarthy versus his former college coach is something that everyone was looking forward to seeing. Are we going to see that, or is it Carson Wentz still for them?
I think it's Carson Wentz on Thursday night, and then I think they reassess after the game. You know, I think Kevin O'Connell, the one thing that's interesting about like all of this is I think you go back to their approach in the offseason, and it's easy to forget this, but they did make an offer to Sam Darnold, and they did make a substantial offer close to what the Colts gave Daniel Jones to Jones to come back. And I, you know, the logic and all of that was not a lack of belief in J.J. McCarthy. It was we haven't seen it yet. And so we've got this roster full of players that are ready to compete right now. We're not a rebuilding team. We can't throw a season overboard in the name of quarterback development. It was a 14-win team last year with a lot of guys that are in the middle of their careers. And so, you know, I think that that's important context to the way this whole Carson Wentz thing is playing out, where it's like, you know, okay, like, let's see what this looks like with Carson Wentz in there. And it wasn't perfect on Sunday either. I know he threw for 300 yards, but he put the ball in peril a bunch, you know? And so this is, I think, a little bit of a tricky situation now. I think the easy thing is, because this is an injury that can recur, you know, the high ankle sprain for J.J. McCarthy, this is the sort of injury that can recur. All right, like, we're not going to push him on a short week, but, you know, I think you see how Carson Wentz plays on Thursday, and then you reassess after that. My hunch is that J.J. McCarthy is going to be the quarterback for the rest of the year after that one, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, week nine, it would be Minnesota at Detroit. So if McCarthy can't come back for his a matchup with his former head coach in college, he'll just have to do it in the state of Michigan, which would be a tough assignment. Albert Breer here on the Rich Eisen Show. A week eight marquee, obviously Sunday nighter with Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers going at it on Sunday Night Football, and Dallas and Denver coming off of some rousing victories and taking on each other. But one that for me, I think, is rubber really meeting the road is the Ravens coming off of a bye at 1-5, taking on a Bears team that's won 4 in a row. I'll give you the floor right here. Lamar wasn't seen on Monday when the team comes out for their first practice. Roquan Smith was out there. What are you hearing about Lamar and the Ravens at 1-5, Albert?
I think Lamar's close. Now, again, they're going to be careful with him. And this is the way they've always operated with Lamar. Like, they've always been very careful. And because he plays the quarterback position in a different way than almost anybody in modern history has, with the way that they involve him in the run game. And, you know, that's something that if you talk to quarterbacks, if you wind up playing in the playoffs and you're beat up, like a runner would be beat up, it can affect your mechanics. So there's a million reasons why they're really, really careful with him. I'd say on the flip side of that, right? Like, and I'm just establishing how careful they're going to be with him. On the flip side of that, this is like now a pretty significant hole they're in. They're 1-5 now, and it's time to start digging out of that hole. And, you know, you looked at the inactive list a couple of weeks ago, and I think it was Mike Garofolo who had the stat. It was something like 20 Pro Bowl selections between the 8 guys who were on the inactive list. They need to get going, and their season, they're close to being at the point where their season is going to be on the line on a week-to-week basis. And this is a team, and I can just tell you this, Rich, going into the year, they felt like this is the most talented roster that they had in a long time, and that this was a team that had a shot to compete for a championship. So there's a massive level of disappointment in how all of this has played out. And, you know, I think Roquan coming out and saying, like, more or less, like, I'm going to be out there on Sunday, like, putting a stake on the ground, I think is setting the tone for everybody. Like, it may not be must win, but they're damn close to it right now. And so it's going to need to be all hands on deck. You balance that against being careful with Lamar. It'll be interesting to see the way the next few days play out.
And then your thoughts going, I always love getting your perspective, Albert, this Sunday nighter, Rodgers trying to get in that rarefied air of beating all 32 franchises, taking on the Green Bay Packers for what
probably will be the last time, unless they see each other in the Super Bowl. You never know.
Yeah.
What are you thinking here with Micah coming off a 3-sack performance in Arizona? This is going to be so much fun on Sunday night coming up.
Yeah. And it's like, it's unbelievable because the way we've been talking about the Packers, because they've been sort of schizophrenic early in the year, right? Like you had the sugar high of the Micah Parsons trade, and then you have the 2-0 start, and then they level off and that inexplicable loss in Cleveland, and then the weird tie with the Cowboys. And now they're back on track. It's hard to believe they're the number one seed in the NFC right now. So they're sort of where we thought they would be. This is a huge game for the Packers, obviously, because every game is big when you're in that sort of position. I'm really excited to see what this looks like with Aaron Rodgers, because just talking to people in Pittsburgh and the people who are around him, you know, over the last couple of games, if you watch Aaron play, you're starting to see the way that he's moving and the way he's making throws across his body. And when you start to see those things where it looks like he's playing loose and free, they really feel like that's indicative of his comfort level now in Arthur Smith's offense, and that already he's starting to take ownership of it, and that he can toggle between playing within the scheme and then being the playmaker that he's always been. And I don't know that he ever got to that point with the Jets, but they really feel like he's getting there for the first time since he was a Packer with the Steelers. And obviously, I think we all know, anybody who's been around Aaron, he's going to say the right things, I'm sure, this week. But we all know he's got a hair across his you-know-what, you know, going one. And there might be some glares up into the suite level there at Acrisure Stadium after this throw or that throw that he makes. I think he still has some bones to pick with some people in the front office there. So it'll be fun to watch. And I do think, like, the interesting thing about the Steelers is not just Aaron. I think other pieces of that operation are coming along as well. Like, that young offensive line really struggled early on, but they had high hopes for that group. That group's starting to come together. DK Metcalf, I think, has been as good as you could possibly have hoped for. And now do the pieces around him start to come together? Your Jonnu Smiths, your Freiermuths, your Roman Wilsons, your Calvin Austins, like, all that's starting to come together. So it should be strength on strength based on how the Steelers offense is starting to play and where the Packers defense is.
In the weekends right here on the ESPN app, where you're checking out Albert Breer on the Rich Eisen Show from Sports Illustrated, Kansas City and Washington in Arrowhead on Monday night. The Chiefs are playing their best football of the year. They're fully constituted. And now we're wondering about Jaden Daniels again and his health. What can you tell me about that? 6 days out right now, Albert.
Yeah, I'd certainly say, like, his health is a question. And this is something that it's such an interesting topic, because it was a concern with him coming into the pros because of the amount of hits that he took in college and how he kept putting himself in harm's way in college. I don't know if you ever saw the Looney Tunes video. Did you ever see that, Rich?
No, sir.
All right. Well, there was a video of him taking just monster hits with, like, Looney Tunes sound effects in the background at LSU. But it did kind of, like, illustrate how, like, he had this way where he didn't get himself out of trouble enough. And it did display his toughness, but it was also like, he's not going to last playing this way if he plays this way in the pros. And certainly I think that's something that's a factor now, right? Like, so that's something you have to kind of pay attention to now in his second year as a pro quarterback, because he's not built like a Josh Allen or a Cam Newton. He's sort of got that angular basketball player build. So, like, that's something that the Commanders are going to be careful with. We'll see where he's at from a health standpoint going into the practice week tomorrow. I wouldn't say it looks great for him, but you know, we'll see whether or not he can make it on Monday night. And then the Chiefs, Rich,
yes, sir,
they're going like this.
They sure are.
They're going like this. I would just tell you this, all right? The people who are around Patrick Mahomes think he may be playing the best football of his career right now. And there was a play 2 weeks ago where he no-looked a pass. No one paid attention to it. He no-looked a pass to Noah Gray in the flat, where he had Hollywood Brown in the slot, and he was looking at Hollywood Brown, and he no-looked. He held the entire defense looking at Hollywood Brown, and he no-looked it over to the flat to Noah Gray. It was a 6-yard pickup, but one of the guys there picked it out for me and said, like, this play right here is the difference. And he's confident in the offense. He's confident in his receivers. And most of all, he's confident in his offensive line, because he can't do that unless he's confident that the offensive line is going to hold up. And that's without Josh Simmons in the mix, right? That's what Jalen Moore at left tackle, who they paid $15 million a year for. So you see that play 2 weeks ago. They ran the exact same play, and it was even more efficient this week. And it was a play at the end of the first half where he had Xavier Worthy in the slot, eyes on Xavier Worthy in the slot, no looks the ball to the flat out to Rashi Rice. Rashi Rice chews up 12 yards, and they pick up the first down. The defense is playing good. Mahomes is at his very best. Mm-hmm. They've got Rice back, who they believe Rice is their very best skill player. That's something they've maintained for 2 years now, that's their best skill player. They just got him back. If the Chiefs stay healthy, I think this Chiefs team could be better than the one that won Super Bowls in 22 and 23. But again, like, that depends on health and some other things. But like I said, Mahomes playing at an MVP level, and the arrow is pointing straight up on the Chiefs.
That's saying a lot. Before I let you go, what is on the docket at this owners' meeting?
Well, there's a lot of things here. Our mutual friend Don Weir wanted me to point out that we still need to set a bet for late November.
So, whatever.
So I had to make sure that's on my docket. So
okay.
Make sure that got into the public forum.
There's a lot of time between now and then, Albert. But don't worry. The odds are in your favor. The odds are in your favor. I mean, who wins five in a row in this series? Oh, wait a minute. You guys once did. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Scripts can flip.
I would say like one of the biggest things at this owner's meeting, because the 18 games is something like we've all been kind of constantly talking about for the last year or two. I would say that's probably backburnered until the union gets its ducks in a row, because they can't go forward with that until they get approval from the union. Mm-hmm. And the union doesn't have a permanent executive director right now. So, like, I'd say that one's probably backburnered. I think the future of the broadcast deals is starting to become front and center for them, with the opt-outs coming and what they're going to do with all the different packages at the end of the decade. So I think that's on the list here among things that they have to discuss. I think the rules, the officiating, that sort of thing is going to be on the list as well.
Like what? Tush push?
Well, I would say the way, I think from a global standpoint, the way they use the technology, because I don't know about you, Rich, but like, I feel like it's really starting to disrupt the flow of these games. And so, like, how do you use the technology? Because technology is supposed to make things more efficient. I don't think technology's made things more efficient in this front. So I think there are some big picture discussions to be had there. I think the tush push could come up. I'm not sure. And then the one thing that I'm not sure if they'll vote on it here, but the next Super Bowl that'll be available. So 60 is in Santa Clara, 61 is in Inglewood, 62 is in Atlanta, which that could be the 18 game season, because the date isn't set yet on Super Bowl 62, which is kind of like one of those things that's a tell, right? Mm-hmm. No Super Bowl date set yet, but the site said that's in Atlanta. Super Bowl 63, I think they've sort of, maybe not locked in, but they focused a little bit on Las Vegas as the host for that. So it's possible they discuss that or even vote on that.
I mean, twist our arms, Albert.
Vegas.
In terms of a setup, in terms of a city, in terms of what you can do outside of waiting for the Super Bowl, in terms of, shows, dinners, hotel rooms, accessibility, walking around, the airport's right down there. Fantastic. It was as good as it gets. So,
I'm the guy who wants it every year in New Orleans.
Plus four.
Plus four.
I'm the one who wants New Orleans every year, Rich. So,
I hear you.
Let's get it back to the Superdome before long. That's all I care about.
Okay, buddy. Great chatting with you. Greatly appreciate it. And just pump the brakes, man. You got 60 out of 66 first place votes. Ohio State is as clearly the best team in college football. A lot of time between now and that game against Michigan. All right, let's just slow your roll. Just take it one week at a time, Albert, okay?
We got a defensive coordinator who might have some scores to settle up there. So let's look at the end of November.
Oh, Patricia? Oh, okay, I didn't know that. All right, with his pencil and everything against Michigan. All right, that's interesting. Albert, take care of yourself. Thanks for the time, buddy.
All right, thanks for having me, Rich.
Everybody check out Albert on socials and, of course, the MMQB on Sports Illustrated. I didn't see that Matt Patricia wants to take things out on the Ford family through the Michigan Wolverines. I didn't see that part of the rivalry coming. Anyway, we'll just focus on that for the next few weeks. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. When we come back here, the Buccaneers side of things from the Monday night loss in Michigan.
The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.
Here on the Rich Eisen Show on our radio and TV simulcast. I've been talking to you about Sonos for a bit. Let's keep doing it. The speakers bring every game to life in my house, and they should for you as well. Music sounds amazing through all of the soundbars and speakers and more that you can check out at Sonos.com. You can also zone it up, meaning one room is one zone, another room is another zone. You can listen to different music, watch different shows in different rooms. It's great for the kids. On my flight home, I'm using the Sonos speakers now. Bluetooth hooks up to your devices. It sounds amazing. Check it all out. Setup is so easy as well. Just plug in, open the Sonos app. You're ready to go. Sonos, they look as good as they sound. So we just talked to Albert Breer, who was talking about how the owners in New York are going to talk about officiating and how technology is sometimes confusing people about when it's used and how it's used. And, you know, part of that's on the broadcasters, but also part of it is circumstances. And a perfect example was last night. Kate Otten reaches for the first down line on a fourth down in the fourth quarter. That's so crucial for the Bucs. They're going for it, and there's a lot of time left. And if they don't get it, the Lions are going to get the ball deep in the Tampa Bay end, and Otten grabs it, reaches for the first down line as he's going down. Ball comes loose. They, you know, all holy heck's breaking loose. Is his knee down before the ball gets down? The ball coming loose as he's trying to reach for the first down line. Does that mean he didn't maintain control throughout the entire catch? The refs all get together. I'm wondering, while they get together, is New York the replay assist getting in their ears to help them out after long discussion? What comes back is first down Tampa Bay. Lions then throw a challenge flag. And what comes back from that is first down Detroit. Even though Detroit, it was announced, was asking for the replay to see if he maintained control throughout, they come back and say, oh, he did. He just didn't get the line again. Baker Mayfield took issue with all of that.
Still pretty damn confused about the double review. A lot of things in that game that a little questionable, but a lot of frustration at the end of that. And it might be displaced onto John Hussey in the moment, but I work my ass off and I put a lot into this game. So when things that I don't seem are deemed fair, I'm going to let somebody know. And that's good, bad, and different.
John Hussey, the name of the head ref of last night's game. He's terrific,
right?
Normally. Hold on a second. Let me just say this. When you ask to review, I learned this from Mike Pereira a long time ago when we're on NFL Total Access and I'm doing the official review. When you ask to review something, everything is reviewable.
Yep.
All of it. So even if the Lions are saying, I need to see if he maintained control of the catch throughout, now it opens everything up for review. And they're like, to answer your question, he did maintain control. So you would lose that part of the challenge, except when you challenge, everything is opened up. Now we're taking a look to see if he made the line again. And they didn't think he did. And I don't think he did either, to be honest with you. And then it's just confusing again. So sometimes replay assist will come in and try and hit that thing. Why wouldn't they buzz in to do that? Because you're going fast. And you got to stop the play. And they don't want to stop play with replay assist. They want to get in between snaps. The time to get in is when Hussey and all the officials are huddling up. But apparently they didn't get a better look at it until the Lions threw a challenge flag. None of it's perfect.
Man, I'm almost to the point now, to get rid of replay.
That's absurd.
Oh, no. That's nuts.
I must push back heavily against that. Definitely not. Just to, again, what echoes in my mind, it was the first owners meeting we ever covered on NFL Network in 2004. Replay was up for vote for permanence. And Charlie Cashley says, if everybody has it at home, we need it ourselves. And he was spot on then, and he is now.
The Rich Eisen Show Podcast.